Andropov arrived in the Kremlin at 12:45 for the 1 p.m. meeting. He made his way inside the yellow cream-colored building. Instead of taking the stone steps, Andropov turned right to go to the elevator for the ride to the second floor, followed by his aide, Colonel Rozdestvensky. Andropov took his seat next to Defense Minister Ustinov. Both sat near the head of the table.
Yuri, the minister said in greeting. Good day, Dmitri.
Andropov had already reached his accommodation with the Marshal of the Soviet Union. He'd never obstructed his request for funding for the bloated and misdirected Soviet military, which was blundering around Afghanistan like a beached whale. Leonid Ilyich Brezhnev came in last of all, walking like the aged peasant he was. He was approaching 80 years, a number he might meet but would not surpass by the look of him.
Good afternoon, comrades, the general secretary said, as pleasantly as his grumbly voice allowed.
Leonid Ilyich had been pre-briefed, and the general secretary turned his face to the KGB chairman.
Yuri Andreevich, you have something to discuss with us?
Thank you, comrade general secretary.
Comrades, he began, something has come up which commands our attention.
He waved to Colonel Rozdestvensky, who quickly circulated around the table, handing out copies of the Warsaw letter.
What you see is a letter dispatched to Warsaw last week by the Pope of Rome.
I've already seen this letter, Alexandrov said from his distant candidate seat.
In deference to the seniority of the terminally ill Mikhail Suslov, the latter's seat at Brezhnev's left hand and next to Andropov was empty.
This is outrageous, Marshal Ustinov said. Who does this priest think he is?
Well, he is Polish, Andropov reminded his colleagues, and he feels he has a certain duty to provide his former countrymen with political protection.
Protection from what? The Minister of the Interior demanded. The threat to Poland comes from their own counter-revolutionaries.
And their own government lacks the balls to deal with them. I told you last year we needed to move in on them,
the first secretary of the Moscow party reminded the rest.
And if they resist our move, the agricultural minister inquired from his seat at the far end of the table.
Dmitri Fedorovich, Alexandrov directed his question at Marshal Ustinov.
The question, comrades, is whether the Poles would resist with armed force. They could not stop the Red Army, but should they make the attempt, the political repercussions would be serious.
The unspoken concern was the effect such resistance would have on the United States of America, which liked to stick its nose where it didn't belong.
Well, this might well incite additional political unrest in Poland, or so my analysts tell me, Andropov told his colleagues.
How serious is this, Yuri Vladimirovich? How serious might it become?
It was Brezhnev speaking for the first time from beneath his bushy eyebrows.
Poland continues to be unstable due to counter-revolutionary elements within their society. Their labor sector in particular is restless. We have our sources within this Solidarity cabal, and they tell us that the pot continues to boil.
The problem with the Pope is that if he does what he threatens and comes to Poland, the Polish people will have a rallying point, and if a sufficient number of them become involved, the country might well try to change its form of government,
the chairman of the KGB said delicately.
That is not acceptable, Leonid Ilyich observed in a quiet voice. If Poland falls, then Germany falls.
And then the entire Warsaw Pact, which would leave the Soviet Union without its buffer zone to the west. NATO was strong, and would become more so as the new American defense buildup began to take effect. They'd already been briefed on that troublesome subject. Already the first new tanks were being given to line units, preparatory to shipping them to West Germany. And so were the new airplanes. Most frightening of all was the vastly increased training regimen for the American soldiers. It was as though they were actually preparing for a strike east. The fall of Poland and Germany would mean that a trip to Soviet territory would be shortened by over 1,000 kilometers, and there was not a man at this table who did not remember the last time the Germans had entered the Soviet Union. Despite all the protestations that NATO was a defensive alliance whose entire purpose was to keep the Red Army from driving down the Champs-Élysées, to Moscow, NATO and all the other American alliances looked like an enormous noose designed to fit around their collective necks. They'd all considered that before at great length, and they feared above all the possible turning away of their people from the true faith, which was the source of their own very comfortable personal power. They had no illusions about what a revolt would do to them. Brezhnev shifted in his chair.
So this Polish priest is a threat?
Yes, comrades, he is, Andropov said. His letter is a genuine and sincere thrust at the political stability of Poland and thus of the entire Warsaw Pact. The Catholic Church remains politically powerful throughout Europe, including our fraternal socialist allies. If he were to resign the papacy and travel back to his homeland, that in itself would be a huge political statement. I suppose we could try diplomatic contacts to dissuade him from this course.
A complete waste of time, the foreign minister observed at once. We cannot influence him, even with direct threats to the church. They merely see threats as challenges.
And that put the matter squarely in the middle of the table.
Yuri Vladimirovich, what can KGB do about this threat? Brezhnev inquired.
It may be possible to eliminate the threat by eliminating the man who makes it, the chairman replied.
To kill him? Ustinov asked.
Yes, Dmitri. I have brought my aide, Colonel Rozhdestvinsky, to brief us in on it. With your permission, comrades?
Andropov received a collection of nods. Then he turned his head.
Alexei Nikolaevich?